Welcome to the Kate Turkington Show. I'm Kate Turkington. And in case you're wondering, and I'm sure you are, what this poster is up behind me, I'm just going to tilt my screen a bit. Yes, there you go. That's Kate many moons ago, before some of you probably were even born. I had a BBC One TV talk show. At my word, no scripts, no autocues, no nothing. On another occasion, I'll tell you some of the stories about Anthony Hopkins. Oh, I've got all sorts of live Beatles, live stories to tell you. But first of all, I want to tell you a story. As you know, I've got so many stories, been alive a long time, and you can't make these stories up. Even if you had the most vivid imagination, you couldn't make some of these stories up. Okay, come with me to Montana. Montana in America, big sky country, gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous. One of my daughters had done a postgraduate degree there, and I'd gone over with my late husband for the graduation, which is a bit of another story, because, you know, when you graduate in South Africa, I'd got myself a very smart little suit. I'd even put heels on, and I touted myself up as one does for a graduation ceremony. Got to the University of Montana, Missoula. And it was like a huge, huge auditorium. There were people in flip-flops. There were people in shorts. There were people chewing gum. There were all kinds of things. So it wasn't quite the ceremony one might have at Wits or UCT or Tackies or whatever. Anyway, after the ceremony, that daughter and another daughter, Tara, Sarah, my husband, Alan, and I are going to drive from Montana, Missoula, Montana, to Seattle. Now, imagine a map of the United States. You've got Montana up there, right at the top, in the middle, under Canada. You've got Seattle right on the West Coast. It's a long, long way. And you have to go over a lot of mountains. You have to go over the Bitterroot Mountains, Lookout Pass, wonderful place. You have to go over the Cascade Mountains. Anyway, off we went. We hired a car. So now we're driving on the wrong side of the road, of course. In South Africa, we drive on the left. In America, they drive on the right. A couple of things happened. We got onto the main highway, and I fell asleep in the back of the car. We were going through some lush, lush forest, some mountainous terrain. I dozed off. When I woke up, there was a beaver dam, and we were like in the middle of the forest. And I said to Alan, who was driving, I don't think this is the main highway. Anyway, we'd wandered into Canada. That's another story. We eventually get back. Now we're nearly out of petrol because we've been lost. So we drive higher and higher up into the mountains. And there's this nice little wooden shack. Think of a Wendy house on steroids, but wooden house with a petrol pump in front of it. So we stop. Now we're going to fill up the car with petrol. Now, if you don't know South Africa and you haven't been here, and you must come because it's wonderful, we don't fill up our cars with petrol. We have petrol attendants at all the petrol stations. So none of us, the two girls, me and Alan, we've never filled a car with petrol before, so we don't know what to do. So they delegate me to go inside the little wooden chalet. I go inside, and there's this guy. I want you to imagine him. I suppose hillbilly, I don't know if that's an unwoke term, but let's say very rural. He had a big black spade-like beard. He had big bushy eyebrows, thick black hair, and he was wearing dungarees and boots, big work boots. So I said, excuse me, please can you help us put petrol gas, I quickly said, in our car. Not a word was uttered. Not a word came out of his mouth. Followed me to the car. He put petrol in, closed, told us, I think there was a meter that told us money. Anyway, he was paid, but not a word was said. He stomped back into his little wooden house, And then Alan said, you know, we've got lots more mountains to go over. I think we should put more air into the tyres. He let all the air out of the tyres. So now we are in this car with four flat tyres. They delegate me to go inside to talk to the guy with the big spade beard. I go in again. So embarrassing. I say, please, can you help us? We've got a bit of a problem. Not a word was uttered. He came out in his blue dungarees and his brown work boots, came in, helped us do all the tyres. And finally he said, where you are from? And I said, Africa. He sort of nodded his head wisely, and off we drove. Off we drove. Okay, quite a dramatic moment I've never ever forgotten. And talking of dramatic moments, that's what I want to talk about now with my guest, Pippa Sandilands. And you may think that schools anywhere in the world come together, high schools, for rugby, for cricket, for whatever, but they also come together here in South Africa for a high school play festival, and it's called FIDA, the Festival of Excellence in Dramatic Art. You may have kids, you may have grandchildren, you may know young people at school. I want you to know just how important drama is in their lives. So welcome, Pippa, and first of all, tell us about FIDA. How did it all begin?
Good morning, Kate. Thank you very much for inviting me to talk about FIDA. So FIDA started over 20 years ago with two drama teachers, myself and my colleague, Janet Bayliss. She started at Crawford, and she was putting on grade 11 plays with her students. And she said to me, can I come and show, or can you please come and watch my plays? And I did. And so she had a couple of plays which we looked at. And then the following year, my students came and joined hers. And so we started sharing some of our work that the students were doing. And it grew a little bit, and one or two other schools became involved. And then we started to think, well, maybe we can dream a little bit bigger. And so we approached Daphne Kuhn at the Theatre on the Square in Sandton, and she agreed us to give us a night or two of her theatre. So the festival, this play festival officially started about 2004, and we started taking two or three schools to the Theatre on the Square in Sandton, and we had one or two nights. And we now have 3 weeks, so we had 18 nights. And we had 66 entrants from over 50 schools. So it was something that started very small. We didn't have a major vision to grow the festival. We just wanted our students to experience, to create work, and to share it. And it's almost got a life of its own. It's just grown and grown and grown and grown.
And for perhaps people who don't know Johannesburg or know Nelson Mandela Square in Sandton, there's this beautiful theatre there, proper theatre, like a little West End theatre or a little Broadway theatre, all the bells and trimming. So for these young people to go into a real theatre showcasing their work. Now, Pippa, you said this year you had over 60 schools entering. What kind of work do they perform? I mean, is it original? Do they do published plays? What's the story?
So it's changed over the years. So when we started the festival, there was a festival called RAPS, and that encouraged you to put on one-act plays. So most of the students 20, 25 years ago, they were all choosing scripts. So when FIDA started, it was mainly published scripted work. And after a few years, some schools started to write their own work. So eventually we had a week or so of published works, and then a week or so of original works. And we had a final in the published section, and we had a final in the original section. And increasingly, the published plays have fallen away, and students want to create their own work. So I think this year, I think we had two or three only scripted pieces, and the rest is all original. So there has been a real growing demand and need for students to write their own work. So I would say 98% of the work is original, and we only have we have 3 weeks of mainly original pieces showcased, and we choose the top three or four or five plays to go through to, you know, a showcase, what we call a showcase. We try not to think of FIDA as a competition, because I think it's far more than that. You know, so I think it's a showcase of some of the best work, but there's fantastic work that doesn't go through. So
just let's talk about some of this work, because this isn't like French farce or an Oscar Wilde afternoon. This is really hardcore stuff that the students are putting out. I mean, I've been privileged to come and see some of it. I mean, what the topics, tell us about the topics, these children. They're not children, they're young people, they're high school. People. Yes, and young adults.
You know, theatre is about it is about showcasing issues in society. And our young students are dealing with an enormous amount. And the world that we live in is very, very challenging. And they are brave enough to put those works into a kind of a theatrical format that I think adults often shy away from. So we find that, you know, these young students just put on anything that they are dealing with. So
give us some examples.
So a lot of the plays deal with gender-based violence. So that was a huge theme this year. Last year, there was a lot on mental health, toxic masculinity. So they're dealing with the things that are taking place in their own lives. And they are writing about it in a very raw, very honest, very provocative way. So, you know, whenever we begin an evening at FIDA, myself or Janet will always stand up and talk to the audience about what they can expect. Because there were 66 plays this year. We obviously don't see them. So the first time we see the plays as well is on the night when they're performing them for an audience. And we never know what they're going to perform. And we always have to warn the audiences that, you know, they have to understand that these students are going to perhaps use language, use very provocative themes, make us feel uncomfortable. Because, you know, often the adults in the audience don't want to hear these things. But the students are very strong about speaking their truth. And, you know, the work is their own. And we have to understand it. And we have to listen to it. You know, I think.
And how much sort of teacher guidance or what role do the teachers play in all this?
So every production has to have a drama teacher or a teacher, perhaps an English teacher or anybody who's interested, supporting the students. I think that's really, really very important. We encourage the students to have their own artistic voices, and we say to them that they have to keep the artistic integrity of the performance for themselves. So we really encourage the students to take ownership, but they do need the support of their teachers. So, you know, for me, I think it's very important that the teachers are at the rehearsals, not all the rehearsals. I think it's important that the students work on their own. But I think the really good teachers are there holding the process, helping the students make kind of theatrical choices, teaching them some of the really important skills that they might need, and guiding them. Because also the other thing with some of these very provocative themes is that the students sometimes give too much. And in theatre, you don't have to. Actually, less is often more, and you can show something very maybe horrifying. You can show it in a way that becomes accessible to an audience. So I think that's the role of the teacher, is to be there to support, to guide. And we also feel that, you know, when you're in the real theatre world, and if you need a physical theatre expert to come in and teach you about fight techniques, by all means, the schools are encouraged. Go out, go and find a person to come in and teach you something. If you need a bit of musical theatre direction or whatever. So there's feedback. We can't control what happens at the schools, but we have a workshop with the students in February, and we bring them all into the theatre space. And we say, walk on the stage, go and look in the change rooms, have a look at the entrances and exits in the theatre. What possibilities are there? Go up to the lighting board, go up to the sound board. You know, but then we say to them in that workshop, this is your work. What stories do you want to tell us? Yes, your teachers are here. They must guide you. They must care for you. They must look after you, nurture you, support you, but keep the integrity of the work yourself. So good teachers
now,
are involved, but yeah, give the students some leeway to create their own work as well.
And Pepper, maybe there are people listening who think drama. You know, I want my young person to be a doctor. I want them to be a lawyer. I want them to be an engineer. What is the point of drama in a school curriculum? How would you answer that?
So, you know, I've been teaching drama for very many years, and very few students take our subject to become an actor. And we don't encourage that. It's not about that. For me, I always say to parents who looking at me a little bit skeptically over the table to say, you know, not an academic subject. How's it going to help my son or my daughter's career? And I always say to them that you're going to learn more about yourself in drama than any other subject. And that's about preparing you for life. So drama is incredible because the students have to be brave. They have to be vulnerable. They have to perform. You know, there are so many skills that they learn in drama. It's an incredibly special subject. And those fathers who sit across the table from me at parents' evenings when their children are in grade 10 and they're skeptical will come to me at the end of grade 12 when the students have performed and they watch the final performances and they're crying. And they come to me and they say they cannot believe what drama has done. I mean, we have performers who come to us in grade 10 who've never been on a stage before. And by the time they finish their matric exam, they do absolutely beautifully. And their parents cannot believe it. And those skills, it doesn't matter what profession you are going into, will be with you forever. And I have many...
What's the most memorable or shocking thing you can remember on stage? Is there... A total wow moment. Are there a couple of moments that out of all these plays, you've talked about gender-based violence, corruption, scarcity of water, I mean, rape, they tackle these topics, I mean, absolutely head on. But has there ever been maybe the most comic moment, the most shocking moment? Share with us.
I mean, we've seen unbelievable comedies. Comedies are very hard. And so we see less comedy than we do drama. And students obviously want to do drama. Look, I've seen some horrifying things. I have sat and watched productions that have been absolutely harrowing. But I think the thing about those productions for me is that if they are authentic and if they are speaking about a truth, then they're important. So sometimes it doesn't matter how horrifying the things you are watching. If they are happening, we need to hear about them. I think a lot of things that are wrong in our society is a kind of a conspiracy of silence, is that we don't talk enough about what's happening. And as adults, we tend to shy away from really difficult things because I think we try and protect students, but the students want to talk about it and they want to talk about it truthfully. So, I mean, we have had a moment and where the adjudicator once actually got up and walked out because there was just quite a hectic scene on stage.
What was it?
It was a scene on rape.
Yeah.
And it was quite graphically performed. And I think the audience were in total shock. And that is our job as educators to maybe in the feedback to those students to say, what you presented to us may have been authentic, may have been very, very honest and truthful for yourself, but there are other ways maybe of showing that on stage. So, for example, there was a play this year about abuse in schools. And all this teacher did, this teacher abuses a child, and the actor just took a bite of an apple, you know, and that was all that was needed to show what the play was, what the scene was about, without being graphic, without doing anything physical on stage. And so, you know, theatre is a beautiful medium for doing things symbolically and, you know, making an audience feel and understand without actually having to spell it out. And I think that's what students do need to learn.
And obviously, This whole, I mean, 60-odd schools, that's hundreds of students. This is also contributing to keeping South African theatre, which is very vibrant, keeping it alive as well.
Absolutely. You know, we had, we sold over 3,500 tickets. So for 3 weeks, our little theatre at the Lesedi Theatre in the Joburg Theatre Complex seats about 250. We had four or five nights that were absolutely sold out, but most evenings we had 150, 160 people sitting in the audiences. So it's for the audiences as well. We're growing audiences, we're growing theatre lovers. Another incredible moment we had this year. So we only had one power failure in the 3 weeks, which was better than last year. Last year, we were in the midst of terrible electricity crises, and we were very worried whether the plays would get on or not. This year, we had a blackout in the middle of a production. In fact, one of the schools, one of the finalists, it was Phoenix College, and the lights went out in the middle of their production, and the whole audience picked up their cell phones and turned them on. So there was a little bit of light, and the students just carried on. And in fact, they improvised something until the lights came back on. And the lights they came on, then they dipped a little bit, then they came on again. And these students just kept on with the audience sitting there with their cell phones on. It was such a beautiful moment. And the students...
And offstage, well, what's the sort of feeling behind scenes? Is there chaos? Is there calm? Have you ever had a diva? Have you had fireworks between actors or schools? Tell us about some of the backstage stuff.
Yes, we have had. So every night, one of my favourite moments, I always arrive at the theatre about an hour and a half or so before, and I go backstage. We have four dressing rooms, and each school is in a dressing room. And mainly there's wonderful camaraderie and everybody is talking and laughing and some are very serious and they'll be standing in a circle and they'll be humming and warming up their voices. So it's normally a wonderful camaraderie. There's never been anything explosive. We've had people crying backstage and being too scared to come on or crying because they felt that their performance wasn't good enough. So we've had some of those moments. This year we had two students who weren't well, and the Joburg Theatre were amazing. We had paramedics running on, so it is all happening backstage. But every group has a teacher, and the teachers are fantastic. They kind of controlling everything, and the Joburg Theatre has a stage manager, which is just fantastic. But it's run exactly like a professional theatre. So, you know, you'll hear, they'll say, Phoenix College, standing by, 5 minutes, and then they're all getting themselves all ready. And
just such. And you're talking about, we've talked about kind of unforeseen moments. There was one play the night I was there that actually dealt with female slavery. Not only, you know, the old slaving persons and our kind of thing, but women today here in the city we're in, probably in the city you're in or even a little town, there were women being kept in slavery. And the end of the play was so powerful, they finished. There was dead silence in the theatre. Dead, dead silence. Apart from the wonderful, the amazing, the necessary topics they're dealing with, maybe just a final question, Pippa. This is Pippa Sanderlands, and we're talking about FIDA, this festival of one-act plays that the students, 99 times out of 100, have written and performed themselves. It's amazing. It's amazing theatre. What's the most spectacular or surprising prop that was ever brought onto stage? Anything from a live chicken to whatever.
We have had a dog. Someone did bring a dog on stage. But I think one of the most memorable moments I have is obviously the students are in the theatre all day. So they arrive in the morning and they go through everything and they do a technical rehearsal and they run their play. And we are supposed to see every single thing that happens on that stage in the technical rehearsal is supposed to happen in the actual performance. But of course, when you're dealing with students, they don't always do that. So there was the most glorious play, and the whole play was covered. The floor was covered in newspaper. So when the lights came up, the audience weren't aware, but there were bodies under the newspaper. So there was this beautiful covered carpet of newspaper, and suddenly the actors started appearing. But what they didn't tell us was that they were going to light a match, and they were going to have a little fire on the stage. You know, and we're very strict, and theatres are very, very strict about fire, and you're not allowed to light a match. And it hadn't even occurred to them to tell anyone that they were going to do that. And the next thing, there was all these newspapers caught alight. Yeah, and that was a moment, because there was
something. So definitely not with a whimper, but a bang.
Yes.
Pippa, thank you. Thank you so much. And I would encourage, you know, young people going to the theatre, watching theatre, getting away from their phones, getting away from TV, having live theatrical experiences, and joining companies like the schools, festivals like this. Okay, that's all for the moment. Travel, remember my man in the Bitterroot Mountains, where you're from. Africa. Travel safely wherever you are. Look after yourselves and look after others too.